lacrosse friends, welcome once again to Box La Beach on NLL Radio. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. A couple of great guests this week, excellent transition players who until 2 weeks ago were teammates with the New England Black Wolves. Jay Thornburt is about to become the number two face-off wins leader in the history of the National Lacrosse League. He's going to pass Jamie Hanford very shortly, either in the next game or in the next couple games. And that leaves only Jeff Snyder, who is probably a couple of years away. But one of the great face-off guys in the National Lacrosse League, a terrific transition player, and just a great guy to talk to. A lot of fun speaking with him this week. And his teammate until 2 weeks ago when Sheldon Burns was traded to the Toronto Rock, the team he had grown up cheering for. He's a Whippy kid from the time he was 9. I talked about this in the interview. Between the time he was 9 and 14, or 8 and 14, they won 5 NLL championships. He didn't want to leave New England necessarily, but he could not be more happy than to join the Toronto Rock, the team he grew up cheering for, and he helped them with his first goal as a Rock, and they got their first win of the season. A great start for Sheldon Burns with the Toronto Rock. So Jay Thornburt, Sheldon Rock, excellent conversations. Thanks for joining me, lacrosse friends. Enjoy Box La Beach on NLL Radio. Joining me on Box La Beach is the man currently in third place all time in face-off wins in the National Lacrosse League, soon to be in second place, Jay Thornburt of the New England Black Wolves. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, are you aware of those numbers? I mean, obviously people mention them to you, I'm sure.
Some of the staff mentioned it to me last year with New England.
Yeah, so you are right now about 30 face-off wins away from passing Jamie Hanford and taking over second place all time in National Lacrosse League history. A little bit further to go to Jeff Snyder, about 450 or so, 420, I believe. But that's a couple of seasons at the rate you've been going. That's pretty good company.
It's pretty good company, but I bet you if you looked at the percentages, I'm nowhere near Jeff, but we'll see, though.
I actually did look at the percentages. it is a bit of a difference. You have a 572 winning percentage in 3,602 career face-offs. You've won 2,061. He has a 726 winning percentage. He took 3,400, won 2,468.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll take a few more face-offs to get there and a few more years to do it. But, he was a stud. Teams were conceding it against him, so I've never had that respect. But
I remember talking to Scott Self once about Snyder when Snyder came to Peter to play for the Lakers, and Scott Self was the captain of the team. And we were just chatting one time, and he said, "Yeah, you know, it's like you just give up at some point." Because he said when Scott was in Edmonton or somewhere, I don't know. Could have been anywhere, really. He played for a lot of teams, but he said at one point they had him taking face-offs, and after a few, he said, you know, I'm not going to win these. So he would just, as soon as the whistle went, he'd pull his stick back and start slashing and hope he could knock the ball loose.
At least he changed it up. At least he stopped trying to win it, and he went to something else. Some guys never switch it up and keep trying to win it.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, I mean, as much as I don't think anyone's going to put you in the category of Snyder in terms of winning percentage, you've won a lot of face-offs. You've done it consistently over your career. It's kind of been an up and down, but the last couple of years have really been some of your better stretches for winning, and you're becoming a real artist in the face-off circle.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, when you take that many draws, it comes a muscle memory, right?
So I want to talk a little bit about the whole face-off thing, and then there's lots more stuff to talk about. We're not just going to talk face-offs because there's a lot going on in New England with the defense, with the players, the style, the coach, everything. But I do want to talk about face-offs a bit because you've been doing them long enough, as did Jeff and as have a bunch of guys, to see the change over the years with the rules changing. The one thing, you know, several years ago they changed the rule, put the sticks further apart opened up the space. It was called the Snyder Rule at the time, in terms of how you're allowed to take the face off to try to make it a little different, so he couldn't just win everything the way he did. And then there was the change to the one step with the ball in the back of the stick. So I want to talk first about how you saw the change, I guess, through your early years, and then when they brought in that rule, widening the gap, first of all.
Yeah, I mean, when I first came in the league, you were able to, almost like summer ball, where you're right on top of the ball. Everybody had the, you know, the old teeter lean going on, and refs could barely get their fingers out of the center dot there. But which made it a little bit, you know, who could cheat better. And now they've kind of, you know, put us farther apart, and now it's more of a speed game. And I find with the balls farther apart, it's someone's getting over the ball first. Someone's going to get to it first, as opposed to before, you would find guys locked up and doing the old circle around the center dot, doing a little spin. But I found with the separating of the sticks, that it definitely made the ball come out faster and easier, because one guy did definitely get to it first.
So then they bring in the rule a couple years ago where you can only take one step. So for anyone who's not familiar with it, you used to be able to clamp down, pull the ball out. You could run as long as you liked with the ball in the back of your stick. You could shoot. I've seen people score with the ball, shooting with the ball in the back of their stick when they would win a faceoff. But then the rule changed. You could only take one step with it in the back of your stick. And that's a pretty huge change to the rule. How did you find that impacting you?
Right off the bat, the year prior, I think I set the record running around with the ball in the back of my stick. And then the year after, they changed it, and you'll see my numbers probably dropped a little bit. It is a little bit difficult getting used to. You have to pop it up right away. Your head's down looking for the ball, not really looking at where the other players are. The opponent has an easier time, kind of, you know, if they bull rush you, it kind of, you can't run away from them, right? So it was an adjustment for me, just strictly because I had made a living in the previous year of pulling it out and running around until I was free to pop it.
Yeah, just to give everyone a context, you're talking in 2015, you won 338 faceoffs, the all-time record for most faceoff wins in a season. 2016, when the rule came in, you won 289, third highest total of your career, still one of the better faceoff seasons anyone's had, but definitely, you know, you're looking at 49 faceoff wins fewer as you adjusted to the rule.
Yeah, I mean, the name of the game is still get over the ball first, right? So that didn't change. Nothing like that changed, but it was holding on to it and keeping the possession. I believe there's probably more 50-50 battles, and you rely on your ball team a little bit more, because I was a guy that, you know, pinched and popped, or not necessarily popped, didn't get it in back my stick, but definitely tried winning it to myself first. And then as that rule came in, it was more relying heavily on your ball team.
Yeah. And I mean, you're still being successful, which obviously speaks to you being able to adapt to it and to the team being set up to succeed. So they're putting guys in position to get that ball when it comes out. And part of that, I mean, I remember watching Jeff Snyder orchestrating where everyone should be before a faceoff. And he would literally point to a guy and say, hey, it's coming to you right over there. And it would go to them right over there. Once everything was set up, it was unbelievable. And you've got to do a bit of that directional winning, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you watch it in the games this year. I'm not popping them all to myself. I'm throwing it out to guys on the line, and you have to do that. Guys on the other team, they're not stupid. I mean, they're trying different tactics of changing of what they're doing, so you have to adapt to that too. So, I mean, not every ball is one hit by me. It's definitely a team effort, and we have our game plan going into the faceoff. You know, Jeff was a special talent with speed and strength, so it was probably a little bit easier for him. But definitely rely on that ball team to kind of be where we kind of, you know, the coaches decide and what we decide. And, you know, we got the loose ball hounds like, you know, Kyle Buchanan and like Colton and like, you know, players like that who can get to those spots first.
Mm. I remember somebody in the last year at some point talking about faceoffs, and they referred to you as a Fogo, and I took offense on your behalf.
offense every time someone says that.
Yeah, because I was like, no, he's not. And I actually was on – somebody put something on Facebook, and I And I said, no, Jay Thornburg is not a Fogo. He plays defense. He plays transition. He can get the ball up the floor. But how much does taking so many faceoffs impact your ability? Because I always thought, well, you know, you take a faceoff, but then you actually talk to guys who do it, and it is draining when you're in there battling. Like, it's hard work going for the faceoffs. How does that impact your ability? Do you take a few less defensive shifts because of that?
Because after you take a draw and say you win it, you come off, and then you know, everybody's all jammed up at the door, and you end up going to the end of the line, right? So, you know, same if you lose it, I tend to switch my stick when I lose it, so I'd rather just chill and get my other stick going, because my draw stick will break. But it's definitely draining. You take a regular shift, you play man down, you play, you know, transition style, so you're trying to push that ball, and then you got a wrestling match in between every shift. So you know, games like Sask happen again. You take like 40 faceoffs in a game, it gets kind of grueling.
Yeah, I bet.
Conditioning is key.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, and so many factors like balance. I mean, it's not that honest. Okay. My experience with taking faceoffs was in a Masters tournament a couple of years ago, and we didn't have anybody. I was actually playing in a junior Masters division, and I was playing with some pretty good players like Mac O'Brien. You would know Mac, and Jeff McKinley, and I had some legitimate guys who'd played high level lacrosse, but nobody wanted to take a faceoff. So I went in and took some faceoffs, and it was actually not that draining, because in Masters, I was just like, I'd just go before the other guy. It's a Masters tournament. The guy's getting paid a few bucks. He doesn't care if you clamp early. And you didn't even have to pop it. You clamp down. And in Masters, you get possession if you lock onto the ball. So I just wait till he blew the whistle. But for you, it is a lot of work. You got to use your shoulders, your legs, everything's going.
Oh, yeah. Central nervous system is firing when you're taking a draw, whether you're taking motorcycle grip or standing up like I do. You're trying to explode and be as quick as possible and strong as possible on that ball. And then even if you do pull it away, you got some of these guys that are just phenomenal athletes chasing you down, or you're trying to chase them down. So it's not an easy thing to do energy wise. I'm sure if I didn't take so many, I might have a bit more energy on the back end, but you know, that's what I'm there to do, so I'll do it. But yeah, so like, it's tiring. I mean, especially you see some of these young kids coming out of university that are just, you know, I don't know, Tasmanian devil just all over you. It's just go away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got Jake Withers and Chase Fraser both coming out of college this year and entering the NLL, both young, strong, face-off guys with lots of energy. You've got, so there's Rochester and Buffalo. You've got Jordan McIntosh in Georgia, has been doing it for quite a while, but they get him some help now and then. And, of course, in Toronto, you've got Brad Cree, who's one of the top guys over the last couple of years. So it's not like you get a lot of nights off either.
No, and everyone's a little different. I mean, you know, Bradley, you see a Cree, he relies on sweeping your hands and hoping for, you know, that ball team to get in. They got an athletic team. And, you know, Jake Withers, he went against preseason, and when you pulled it away from him, he had no time. Yeah. He was all over you. You know, a guy like Zach Currier, he's the same way, right? Saw him take a few, and with the Team Canada field across, he was. These guys just don't stop. I don't know Chase Fraser, but I'm sure he'll be just like that. So
yes, sorry to tell you,
it's always tough.
It's interesting in the back end. You've had so much change on this New England team. So many players are different. You mentioned Colton Watkinson, and of course he's been a major factor, being that first round draft pick and a great addition to the team. You've also got, you know, Adam Bomber, he came over, David Brock, John LaFontaine in a trade. You know, you've got Matt Spanger, who's really just establishing himself. There's a ton of turnover. Anthony Joakim has joined the club. That's a ton of turnover in the back end.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, you know, with the coaches and everybody, they decided what they wanted. You know, coming into this season, more transition, more athleticism, and, better stick skills and ball handling. So, you know, they made the changes that they wanted to, and I think they were good. These guys are they're so athletic. Guys like Colton just up the floor and all three steps, and you know, Jokes, he's turning into a solid defender. Like these kids play so much lacrosse coming up into the NLL. They're coming in NLL ready. Like, so it's good for us. You know, David Brock, veteran leadership. So I think we got, you know, once we start gelling real well and things like that, we'll be a very difficult team to play against.
It's always a challenge when you do have a lot of turnover. People look at a group and say, oh, they've got all these guys added. Their defense should be better. And that, I mean, obviously it was a bad season for you guys defensively last year. Nobody's questioning that. But there is a lot of turnover, and I think you've got the makings of a really good defense. But like you said, you've got to gel. You also have a new defensive coach because Jim Veltman and his family went on a sabbatical tour. They're off having a great adventure, and Jim was quite clear he didn't want – to be holding anything over the team and making them wait for him. He said, no, go ahead. So they promoted Clem DeRazio, who was with the team, but in doing video and scouting and things. And now he's coaching the defense. So you've got a bunch of new players. You've got a new coach, and you're trying to play a bit of a different style, like you said, with more transition. There are a lot of moving pieces. How do you guys adjust to that on the fly?
I mean, it starts in practice, starts in preparation, right? So everybody, you know, the coaches, they set out their plan and their vision for the team, and it's up to us to basically, you know, implement that. So, I mean, with the turnover, it kind of helps, really, because no one's, you know, that's a lot of guys that weren't in Veltman's system, right? So now, you know, you don't have so many guys trying to transfer over. Defense to change all the time. Offenses are always changing what they're doing against you, so you always got to adapt and overcome anyway. So it's no different in Clem. You know, it's relatively the same system, hard pace, and he's got some tweaks here and there. But you know, he knew what Jim was trying to do, and he's changing it, you know, as they see fit. So it's good. I mean, we just got to gel, get on the same page, and kind of get, you know, communication is key within defense, and sometimes you get in a rhythm with guys that you don't even have to communicate. It's just knowing what you're going to do. So we're trying to get to that point, and I think you know, once we do, it'll be good to see.
Obviously, it'd be nice if that happened quickly, because you've got this weekend off, you get a couple of practices, but then home-and-home games over 2 weeks against Rochester, who's come out to a blazing start. Tough loss for them last weekend after all kinds of travel issues, but they're a strong team. And those two games, I know it's early in the season, you know, your fourth and fifth games of the year, but clearly those could come back to be critical when it's coming down to the final couple games, looking for difficult to earn playoff berths in the East Division.
Yeah, two division games against, you know, they mean a lot. You know, it's only 19 league, and there's only 18 games, so you got to win as many as you can. And we don't want to lose any tiebreakers, right? So usually it comes down to something. You know, it's really tight. So you know, Rochester, they're flying, they're athletic. They, you know, if you've seen like anything on Instagram and whatnot, they run a lot. You know, they. You know, and all their practices and training outfit, you know, they're doing a lot of fitness stuff, so they don't stop. And, you know, much like a team like Saskatchewan, their offense was always moving, you know, and they picked us apart. So we definitely have to bring our A game for a team like Rochester.
How tough is it when you go into Saskatchewan and have a really bad game? I mean, you guys, obviously not a lot was working for you guys, and Saskatchewan got on a roll, as they can do to people. How hard was it to come back from that and be ready to play, you know, your next game and know that you couldn't be licking your wounds? You had to be ready to go for Vancouver, or they'd do, you know, they're not the same as Saskatchewan, but boy, they had a lot of talent that was just waiting to explode, and you had to make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's no easy nights in the NLL. Every team can beat you on any given night, so you got to have a, you know, short memory, just forget about it, and learn from the mistakes, and take the positives, and if there were any, and really just forget about it, put it in the back of your mind. You know, you watch the game film, you know, you take ownership on what you did wrong yourself, and then you just move forward with it. And I think we did that, and we came to play in Vancouver. I mean, it was a crazy game of runs, but we ended up on top, so we did what we were there to do. But yeah, after you get, you know, blown out like we did in Saskatchewan, you know, you don't make any excuses, you own it, and then forget about it.
That was a strange one. I mean, I'm trying to obviously, lacrosse is always a game of runs. There's always things like that going on, where it's going, you know, one direction and then the other. But I mean, that was a really strange game where, you know, Vancouver scores. I was trying to remember. Okay, it was six in a row. Seven in a row.
It was two. They scored the first two. I think we scored six, and they scored seven, and then we scored seven.
Yeah. I mean, that's bizarre. Do you remember other games like that, or is that the strangest one for runs?
No, usually it's like, you know, okay, they go in there on the floor, we go on our own three, and then they like want to go each, and then, yeah. For it to work out like that is quite crazy. And then playing, and you're kind of like, have we scored in a while? What's going on right now? Yeah. But I mean, then that transition shows up, and you know, every show, you know, just starts bearing the ball, and that show just shows up. But you know, he comes to life and scores all this, and then they're flying. So, and then once the energy starts going, then I think that's why a game of runs, momentum and energy, especially when you're at home. But we just haven't, you know, ran out of time, right, for them to go on a second run.
Yeah. It was strange. I mean, you actually went 33 minutes. Without scoring.
Yeah, that's insane, you know. Like, that 33 minutes, that's... when you get goals in, like, the first minute of games, and then they go 33 minutes without, yeah. You know, it's...
Yeah.
Well, no explanation. I got nothing for you on that.
No, I know. It was just funny. In the second quarter, you score four goals in 2 minutes and 1 second. Four goals, and then you go 33 without scoring one. It's just, and watching the game, it was legit. Like, in that 2 minutes, you guys were, I mean, Crowley and Buchanan scored all the goals between them, but everything was clicking. But in the stretch where you didn't score, it really, the offense looked shaky, the transition. You had some chances, but, you know, it wasn't going the way it was. But then, all of a sudden, it's not like it was fluky that you didn't score for a while and then that you did score a bunch. You played substantially differently. And obviously a lot of that has to do with you adjusting to Vancouver and how they were playing and the way things were going, a couple of breaks. But it really was crazy dichotomies in some of those stretches.
Yeah, the lacrosse is a strange game. Our game plan didn't change, you know, 33 minutes, you know, you adjust on the fly, but there's no real explanation. Like, it was, you know, guys are still working hard. Guys are still doing this, you know, sticking to the plan. And it just doesn't work out. It's just, then all of a sudden it clicks and seven go in. It's crazy.
It's interesting, you know, you hear fans and folks talk and some of my colleagues in the media saying, oh, you know, the effort at this and the effort at that. And it's like, you know, it's not like guys aren't trying. I mean, there are energy ebbs and flows, but it's not like people just don't try for a stretch, right?
Yeah, no, definitely not. Everybody's there to win. And if you know any of the lacrosse guys, everybody is very competitive. So definitely not that guys aren't trying. Just for whatever reason, things just don't go the way you want them to. And that's really all the reasoning I have for it.
I remember... I'm in Peterborough and I've been to, you know, been around a number of Man Cups and playoff series with the Lakers while they're playing. And so many times I've heard people say, like fans say, oh, and other people say, oh yeah, the Lakers threw that game. They didn't even try to win that game. So they'd get another home game and get another crowd because they get like 3,000 or 4,000 people. And you know, they just want another home person stuff. And I usually tell people, and you know, Sean Evans, and he was a key player on those. And I'll tell people, you walk into that dressing room and tell those guys they have to throw a game.
Yeah, no, that's not that's nobody's mentality. You got like Sean Evans, he wants to win every minute of every game. So he's definitely not going to throw a game against a home game.
It's just funny.
Yeah, right? Like I said, anybody can beat anybody, so you want to get it done as quickly as possible. So that's, I have to agree on you. Nobody wants to. Nobody wants to not win.
No. I have one more face-off question I meant to ask earlier, which is actually about the sticks, and it was good. You mentioned that you switch sticks, as most guys do, have a face-off stick and a regular defense stick, or I guess an offense stick for the odd guy like Chase Fraser that does play some offense. But I'm curious how they're different, like if it's a different head and shaft, if it's strung differently, just what the differences are between them that you can tell us without giving away any trade secrets.
It mine is just a little, for the most part, they get kind of wonky on a face-off, and they all warp, they all bend and things like that. So when you're playing, you know, defense and you're trying to slash a guy, you don't want to stick that, you know, is bending too often, and you definitely want something you can shoot the pass with. So I find my draw sticky. Even after a draw, all the shooting screens could be pulled tight, and you never know where it's going to shoot or throw. So it leave that on the bench and grab a stick that I know is going to shoot well. Yeah. And it might stick a little lighter than my defensive stick.
Right.
Strictly for just, you know, try to get any advantage you can. A lighter stick, move hands, move quicker, things like that.
The face-off stick is lighter.
My face-off stick is definitely lighter, yes.
Really?
If I cross-check somebody with my defensive stick, the very good draw stick is definitely lighter, just so it...
Interesting. I just thought, I mean, most guys where I've seen both of their sticks, the face-off stick usually looks like it's a bit of a beast to withstand the kind of stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, the head itself is a different head. I use a string cane normally when I play, and then the head itself is actually like an Under Armour head that's not made anymore. I think I might have the last four in my garage. Wow. But other than that, yeah, it's a lighter stick than the one I normally use, and it definitely doesn't shoot or pass as well as the one I use normally. Yeah.
How many heads do you go through in a season? Obviously not too many if you're got a few that are lasting you.
So we're three games in, I'm on my second head.
Okay. So those four might be done this season.
That was four, yeah. I'm going to have to retire at the end. No, I just... yeah, I got four left, and I got an idea of what head I'll go to. I can't find any more of this head, but we'll see. We'll wait and see what happens. But yeah, I'll try and make them laugh a little bit longer. You know, maybe put them under the torch gun, you know, unwarp them a little bit, and hopefully it'll last.
Sounds like a fun off-season project for your workshop.
Oh, yeah. For sure, yeah. Completely customizable stick that I need to last the rest of my season. I only have four left.
Yeah. How is travel going these days? Because, I mean, the Rochester thing was a big story last weekend. It's Kyle Jackson's come out with a vlog that he does, and he's talked about the travel that it took them 24 hours to get down to their game in Georgia, and they wound up having to delay the start of the game a couple hours. And going to New England, going to Connecticut, you know, you're going to run into some travel issues at times, right?
Yeah, so far going to Connecticut, it's not bad. We fly into Boston and take the, you know, a car down. So it hasn't been bad going that way. But Saskatchewan, obviously, we had our problems. Some guys didn't even make it. I think they landed at Seth Oaks and Bomber. They landed at like 9:40 at night, like after our game, basically got there and then jumped back on the shuttle and went home.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think half of it, the issues right now is, you know, Christmas time, New Year's. And I mean, we don't charter planes, right? We take the regular flights.
Yeah.
Guys come in from all directions. You can't really charter a plane for two guys coming from one location, right? So, I mean, it's just time of the year and things like that. And definitely the snow and weather, right? Like, it's once one plane gets backed up, it's tough. But it's life in the NHL.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd definitely be a shame if games had to be canceled because teams can't get out. But I don't see really a solution. Their teams are leaving, you know, early enough, and then flights get canceled. So I don't know. You know, maybe we just avoid those weekends. But
The Christmas is a tough weekend.
Just have Buffalo play Toronto on those weekends.
That's right. Yeah, let people drive where they're going.
Yeah, let people drive instead of fly. But I mean, it's just tough. And, you know, you're not charting flights, so I think you're going to run into that problem.
Yeah.
At least once in a while. But so far, that's two weekends. Right now, the teams have had a little bit of issues getting to where they don't need to go.
Yeah. Now, I actually hadn't noticed. I did see that Adam Bomberry was a scratch when you're in Saskatchewan. Seth Oaks is listed on the game sheet, but he has zeros across the board. So he didn't make it for the game?
Neither of them did. So we had an extra guy with us.
Yeah.
And so we couldn't start the game with two guys down, so we put one guy in, and then we had to scratch one of them just, you know, in hopes that they would show up.
Right.
And then they never did. They actually landed after the game ended.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So if Barber was there, he wouldn't have been a scratch. I'm pretty sure. So yeah, it was what we had to do, right? We had five lefty offensive guys. That's not the not the strategy for most teams. So
that's right, because you had LeBlanc had arrived for that one, and JP Keeley was in, Kevin Buchanan. Trying to think who else. Riley O'Connor. And who am I missing? Mark Cockerton went in as well.
Yep.
So, five lefties. And,
so we couldn't start the game with two guys down. So we had to put, the extra player, because you only have one guy scratched every night. Yeah. So he was in, and then we put Seth in there to give, Evie and Crowley a break when he got up, got there. And unfortunately, his flight never landed.
Oh, boy. So that's why you lost to Saskatchewan.
No. There's no excuse. Yeah. That's definitely not why. They did outplay us. So
Now, you mentioned Adam Bomber, and he wouldn't have been a scratch, which I think it's interesting that he hadn't really, until this year, found a regular role. But I remember watching him play in junior. He played junior B in 2015, won the Founders Cup with Akwesasne, and then went to Six Nations to play the Minto Cup, won that, and played a huge role in that, helping to shut down Chris Kluche for Coquitlam. And then he went to the World Championships and played for the Iroquois Nationals and had a breakout tournament. Like, that's where people were like, holy cow, this kid can play. Then gets drafted and just didn't really find a spot in Rochester. But I think a lot of us who have seen him play quite a bit were just kind of waiting for him to get that chance.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's a very smart guy. He knows the game. He's athletic. He gets in the position, and he can score in transition. As you saw last game when he got the opportunity. He's been great for us, and he's still developing. So it, he just needed some guys just need their shot of a full time role, and then they just kind of run with it. So I mean, I don't know why. He didn't get the chance in Rochester, but we're very happy to have him.
Yeah. You've got a bunch of young guys. We've talked about Colton Watkinson and how fast he is and what a beast he is. I think Matt Spanger is a guy that's been overlooked a bit. I've tried to let people know how good this guy is, and he had a few things to iron out defensively, but now I think he's a massive impact player as well for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big body, he's very athletic, and, he's same situation. He's still, developing as a player, waiting for his shot for full-time minutes. And, some of these guys, when they get, one game in here or there, you don't really get to see the full effect of what they can do. And now that he's got a full-time role, he's, really coming into his own. So, he's a young guy that's developing, and we're in the same thing. We're, happy to have him. Pushing that ball and creating havoc on the other team's offense. So, young guys, like I said, they're all super athletic and, maybe I was as fast as they were back in the day, but no, maybe not now, but, they're just, athletic as can be and picking up little tidbits and things like that. And yeah, full-time role really helped them.
Yeah. I remember seeing you move pretty fast in your day, so I think you definitely had the wheels, and you can still go. I mean, you're still, I'm going to say maybe twice as fast as I am. I'm old, and I'm not really designed for sprinting, but you look real fast to me.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
The other guy I'm really interested in on this team, and we talked about Anthony Jokum, who has come on as a rookie this year, but to me, Joel Coyle, who was drafted last year and has really become one of the core guys on this defense quickly, and I don't know that a lot of – because he's one of those guys, the D guys, who he's doing well so you don't really notice him because he's not going to run the floor a ton. He will get up the floor, but he's more of a stay-at-home guy, but he has turned into a top five D guy pretty quickly in this league.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys, he's a little water bug, he doesn't stop. He keeps moving. He's full of energy. He's always smiling. He's happy to be there. He's having fun. So he's just an energy guy for us. And he's definitely playing, one of those top five roles. He's great defensively and just like Bomber, you can see when he gets up the floor, he can shoot. Mm-hmm. And he mean, he's another one of those guys, right? Young and coming up and full of energy and things like that, and we need that. So it, I'll take him on my ball team any day.
That's, I mean, you've pointed out and you've seen, used the same description, athletic and energetic for a lot of these young defenders, which I think is making a big difference. And certainly I know you guys are looking forward to having this crew come together and really see what you can do as the season goes on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the way the league's going, is young, athletic, fast, and things like that, right? So these guys can move. And, you know, some teams put athletic offensive guys on the back door, right? Because that's a desire to just really push that ball and transition the ball up. So these young guys, with the, you know, the mix of the veterans we have, we're really hoping that we all start, you know, to gel really well. And you know, and these guys, they're only going to push us. When you're young and fast, got some older guys, and man, I got to get better, I got to get faster. These guys are just running around in circles on me.
Hey, Sudsy's almost 40, and he's hanging in.
Yeah, Sudsy's a freak. I call him Ivan Drago, though. He's one of those guys, those old wily vets that, you know, are so smart and so crafty that they, you know, and he's in great shape. So he knows the game. He'll be around for probably longer than just this year.
Yeah. Really appreciate
you. Know, these young guys learn a lot from guys like that.
They
really do. So that's what you need. And we have a good mix of that. So you got young guys in the middle and guys who've been around for quite a while. So it, you know, it's a good mix. And yeah, like I said, once we get clicking and once we get, you know, that trust and everything all developed, we'll be, I mean, we've shown glimpses already, but full 60 and for 18 games.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now, you know what? It occurs to me that we've talked about basically every guy in your defense, except for Brett Manny. And when you said, you know, the veteran guy who's really figured it out, we can't leave Brett out because he's one of my favorite players in the game, one of my favorite guys to talk to around the rink, and a guy who has gone from pretty humble beginnings in the league to really become a solid source of defense, an alternate captain for you guys. And I just didn't want to leave him out.
No, absolutely. He's my roommate, so you can't leave him out. No, he's phenomenal. He's one of our assistant captains, and he's such a presence and a leadership in our room. So, he's awesome. He's one of those guys where, like, he just does his job, and you don't notice anything wrong, anything like that. So he's just one of those guys that just does what he's there to do, and tries to get the boys, you know, thinking properly, heads up all the time. And he's just a phenomenal player and a phenomenal leader.
All right, we got Brett Manny in. I would have felt bad. So now I will thank you for your time and being available, and certainly looking forward to seeing how this team gels as the season goes on.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Joining me on Box the Beat, the newest member of the Toronto Rock, Sheldon Burns. Welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here.
So it's an interesting thing. I was thinking about it with you being traded. You've never been traded before. You haven't even really changed programs a whole lot, have you? I mean, you're a Whitby kid. You grew up in the Whitby area. You played, you know, a year of Green Gales, 4 years of Warriors, a couple of years of Redmond. You've never really changed organizations. Is this a really strange experience for you?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been in a league too long, so I really haven't had that experience of being moved around too much. I mean, you see some of the older guys as they progress through the league and into their later years in their career. You start seeing guys move around, but yeah, this is totally a new experience for me, and it's something new for sure.
When did you hear about it, and how did you hear about it? I mean, did you get a call from the team saying, hey, you know, we've had to make a move?
Yeah, so the night before, the night before we had practice in Scarborough there at the Stephen Leacock facility, and nothing was out of the ordinary. I don't really think anyone really knew about it till really the next day. It kind of came into fruition, so got a call early that next day, and kind of was given the news.
And was it a bit of a shock? I mean, do you have any idea something might be happening, or?
No, I had no idea. I mean, there's always talks about, about teams looking for certain guys and then this and that. And I was aware that our team was maybe looking to pick up somebody for the left side, but, this is something that was completely, out of my knowledge, and it was kind of it was definitely a surprise for me.
Yeah, because I mean, I'd heard for a few months that New England was trying to get Stephen LeBlanc, was interested, and that was confirmed after the trade when, you know, Rich Lisk was saying, yeah, we'd been talking to Toronto for quite a while. They weren't really doing it. But I'd only heard that side of it. I had no idea who was going to be going the other way. And I was a little surprised that it was you, because I know New England didn't want to give you up, and they didn't didn't like the idea, but they had added a bunch of depth in the defensive end and some transition. A guy that you're familiar with in Colton Watkinson, who'd come up to play a transition role. And obviously they had to give up somebody good to get Stephen LeBlanc. So the other side of it is Toronto, I know, is really excited to have you here.
Yeah, I mean, they've been nothing but welcoming to me, and I mean, from the top down, I mean, everyone's been really welcoming, and I've been really appreciative of that. So it's been a neat, seamless transition, and it's been great so far.
Now, I took a look at the history and did the math, and now, first of all, we've got to clear up your birth date, because the MSL site and the NLL site have different days and years. I'm guessing it's October 5th, 91.
Yeah, let's get that out there. October 5th, 91.
Okay, because the MSL site has October 8th, 1990, but no, you're younger than that.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
I just noticed it today. I hadn't realized that it was wrong, but...
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so...
Actually, let's clear up my weight as well, because I haven't been 185 for about 10 years.
What are you at now?
200.
Okay. That seems more likely. That's the one thing. Sometimes the height and weight gets kind of stuck on there on a site, and it just gets picked up from one to the next.
Yeah, zero fluctuation in weight over the last 10 years, I think.
Yeah, so since you're a teenager. Speaking of which, as a preteen and teenager, you were between the time you were 8 and 14, the Toronto Rock won 5 National Lacrosse League championships. I mentioned you're a Whitby kid, a lacrosse player. You must have been a Rock fan.
Absolutely. Yeah, I still remember. I mean, when I was younger, I mean, I had a Jimmy Velton poster on my wall. Still had the Rock jersey from when I was younger. I mean, it was definitely a team that I followed, and it's kind of crazy how things come full circle when you think about it, and it's an exciting time for me, and I'm looking forward to what lies ahead with this organization.
I mean, I'm sure you enjoyed your time in New England, the team that drafted you and gave you a chance, and you certainly had some excellent success there. But again, to come to the team that you followed as a kid and I'm sure dreamed of playing for has got to be, like you said, a pretty exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about the New England organization. I mean, I truly enjoyed time there, and I mean, like I said, it was a surprise. So I mean. And no way that I want to be necessarily traded. I mean, it's a business at the end of the day, and they had to make a decision. I respect all the guys that I've played with over the last few years, coaching staff. I mean, they personally reached out to me and kind of explained the situation and kind of said their goodbyes. That was it.
And now you're in Toronto, and the one thing is there are not a lot of guys there. I mean, even though it's there's a lot of Ontario guys, I'm looking at the roster and thinking Dan Lintner is probably the only guy on the team that you've played with before back in Whitby, right?
Yeah, Absolutely. I think Lindner's the only guy that I played with. I mean, I've had the opportunity to play against a lot of the players. I mean, as well as I've met a few throughout the community and that. I mean, you know that the lacrosse community is pretty tight-knit, pretty small. So, I mean, there's always opportunities, I mean, through summer ball and different things like that and to meet different guys. So I wasn't completely at a place that I walked into the change room.
Yeah, and you mentioned the number of guys you played against, largely from Orangeville when you were – there was a huge rivalry between Whitby and Orangeville. I mean, there still is, but that stretch of sort of 2009 through 2012 when you were in Whitby and some of the Orangeville guys that are in Toronto now, Rob Hellier, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, you know,
Brad Cree, Billy Hostrouser, right?
Yeah, Billy Hostrouser, Rosie.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm forgetting somebody, but.
You mentioned Adam Jones?
Yeah, Adam Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a bunch
and
of guys.
Coach Matt Sawyer as well.
Of course. So, I mean, they knew what they were looking at when they and it was clear to me hearing about the trade that they really wanted to get you in, and you've been a really solid player since you got into the league. And I found it interesting the year you were drafted in 2014, you were taken in the third round, 22nd overall. I was a bit surprised because I had you rated. I actually had you eighth in my top 50 prospects. I had you as a kind of late first, early second round guy and was surprised. Were you surprised at the time with where you were drafted?
I mean, at the time, absolutely. I mean, it's hard not to to ignore some of the pre-draft, the mock drafts and stuff like that. And obviously, it's an exciting time trying to get into the league and the draft. And obviously, I read into it, but I mean, you really can't read into it too much, and you got to kind of think about. The things that happened in that draft. I mean, there's a lot of moves within the first couple rounds that were unexpected and stuff like that. And I mean, I got drafted, and I knew it, regardless of, I mean, what number I went, what round I went. I mean, I knew I had one job, and it was, I mean, to make a team and to prove myself. And that just kind of lit a fire a little bit. Going into training camp, that hey, maybe people aren't really sure about my game, and you know what, I had to bring it, and I was lucky enough to be able to prove myself in New England and over the last 3 years there. So
that was actually going to be my next question, was whether you think about that, using it at the time or since as a bit of motivation, and I mean, obviously, I'm one of the major people writing. Like, I probably write more about the drafts than anybody else does. So sorry if I got your hopes up a bit at the time.
For sure,
yeah.
For sure.
But,
I've always kind of been that fly under the radar guy, and I still believe I am. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
I think I was pretty good, though. I think eighth is, you look back at that draft, and I think eighth isn't a bad spot for you to have gone.
I appreciate that. Absolutely, I appreciate that. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it really doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you look back at it, I mean, how many people went before me that are still in the league, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. Most of the first rounders, not all of them. But you look at the second round, the guys who went ahead of you, and really, it's Matt Bennett is in Buffalo still, and Alex Bouquet is now in Buffalo. Those are the only two guys from that second round who are still playing in the league.
Right. So it just goes to show that the draft is just like that. I mean, if you don't come ready to go, I mean, in training camp, anything can happen.
Yeah. Now, speaking of, you're saying you kind of fly under the radar sometimes. So you arrive in Toronto, you're playing your first game, and late in the first quarter, Dan Craig, in his first game ever in the NLL, scores a spectacular goal, a behind-the-back bounce shot, just unbelievable goal. Shortly after that, Tom Schreiber, you're shorthanded, he comes around the back of the net. His helmet gets knocked off. He keeps going, switches hands, shoots and scores, finishes the play. Just two amazing goals back to back. They've still, the camera, watching it on the live stream, the camera was still on the Toronto bench showing, you know, Schreiber having scored when, and you hear Andy McNamara in the background saying, and Burns has the ball, he shoots. And we cut to you just as the ball is bounced into the net and you're celebrating right under the boards. So a lot of us didn't even get to see your first goal. That's pretty under the radar, but it must have been an exciting moment to get that one.
Yeah, it was definitely a good run for us. I mean, had that opportunity off the draw to pick up that loose ball and take it to the net. So, I mean, you're right. I rewatched the game film and I was like, oh no, they definitely missed it. So yeah, you got the tail end of it, but I mean, hopefully there'll be plenty more, for them to catch.
And the replay got it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had family and friends there that filmed the replay on the Jumbotron there. So, I mean, it's all good. I've seen it.
How many folks did you have there at the game, live in person?
I must have had about 20 at least family and friends that were there. I have a pretty good supporting cast. I mean, everyone was really excited to hear that I got traded to Toronto, obviously. I mean, that means more games for them during the season that they get to come out and support, and I'm really thankful for them. And they've been great throughout my career so far, so.
Yeah, I mean, having been in the Eastern Conference and getting to, obviously being with New England, you'd have played in Toronto a fair bit over the last couple of years, but now it's all the time people get to come and see you.
Right, and yeah, Toronto's just one of those spots, right? I mean, it's the home away from home. I've always loved playing in Toronto, so I mean, it's great to be able to call the ACC the home arena now.
Yeah, you got to remember what it's called now, right? It's still the ACC for the time being, isn't it, or has it changed?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still the ACC. I hope so.
Yeah, it's because I think like Scotiabank is going to be taking over the naming rights. I don't even know. I still call it the ACC. I still call the Skydome the Skydome. So I'm a little
right.
Now you are now tied for the Toronto Rocks leading scorer among defensemen, with 3 points, two of them in that game, and of course the one from New England. So were you lording that over your new teammates a little bit?
Not so much. I don't really read into the stats so much. So I really wasn't sure of that at all. That's the first time I've heard that. But I mean, as long as we're winning, I'm happy. So hopefully we can keep the train rolling when we leave out for Vancouver on Friday and come home with a big W.
So we're recording this on Wednesday evening. You got to practice tonight with the team. And, I mean, you kind of get thrown into that first game and have to just kind of go. And obviously you get a chance to learn a bit, but you're probably feeling more comfortable now having had a game and a practice under your belt as you get ready to really get familiar with the systems and how this team likes to play.
Absolutely. I mean, stepping in. Again, everyone's been really, really helpful. Trying to get my feet wet as far as the systems and stuff go defensively. But I mean, it's nothing I haven't seen before. I mean, Toronto plays a very similar defensive system as I played with Derek Keenan when I was with the Wolverine Warriors. So that really fast-paced, high-pressure defense. So I mean, it was just a little bit of a refresher when I got there. So,
and we know that, I mean, Matt Sawyer and The Rock like to push the pace, which fits in very well with your style of game. You're ready to run. I mean, obviously your focus is defense first, but when you get a chance to go, you're going to take that opportunity to run.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not only myself, but I mean, we have a lot of players that can push the pace, and I really like the guys that we have. I mean, you saw last game. I mean, we had about four different transition opportunities that led to goals. And I mean, mm-hmm. if we have that on every night, I mean, we're going to be a dangerous team.
When you have so many guys who can run, I mean, you go down the list of your defensive players, and I mean, Latrell Harris can be very dangerous. Chalen Rogers had a couple of goals the other night. Brody Merrill, one of the best transition players of all time. Damon Edwards, Brock Sorensen, Drew Belgrave scored a goal. So many guys who can take off and be effective in transition. How do you communicate that? You've got to develop, I guess, an awareness of each other of who's going, because you don't want like four guys taking off down the floor. You've got to be sensible about it.
No, obviously it's defense first. I mean, and everyone knows that. I mean, those guys are extremely athletic. They like to push the ball, but I mean, everything's situational. I mean, not everyone's going to be kind of leaving other guys out to dry. You got to be smart about it and push the ball in those situations.
Your first chance to play with Brody Merrill, who I just mentioned, one of the great transition players of all time. I think many people would argue possibly the best transition player in the history of the National Lacrosse League, certainly on the short list for that. Anything you've learned from him already, or anything you've noticed just from getting to be in the dressing room and on the floor with him and that close to seeing one of the greatest of all time?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's an honor to be able to sit a few stalls down from, like you said, to one of the best transition players. But I mean, I've been watching Brody for years. I mean, and dissecting how he plays and stuff like that. And he's an extremely smart player and he's deadly in transition. So I mean, definitely like to model myself after him, and I'll continue to learn over my tenure with Toronto. So
any particular plans? I mean, things change up a bit. Now you're going to Vancouver, as you mentioned, this weekend. What's the preparation like for that trip? And because, you know, it was fairly short notice for you that you're going to be heading out there, but I guess it's just part of the drill when you're a pro athlete.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I kind of got traded in a little bit of a slump as well. I mean, New England was coming off a bye, and then I got traded into a bye. So, I mean, I got about a little bit of time off to kind of sit and recollect and focus on the new team and kind of the goals. I mean, they're obviously didn't really start. I mean, off the season too hot, right? I mean, with the 0-2 start. So I mean, it was awesome to get that first one under our belt, that monkey off our back, and we had a great practice tonight. Nice fast pace practice, and the guys are ready to go to Vancouver. I mean, we're a hungry team, and Bill Hostrauser said it in the dressing room the night before we played Buffalo. He told a story about being hungry, and we kind of just put that on, and we're hungry, but we want to win, and that's what we're going to bring into Vancouver, and we're going to continue to push the ball up the floor from the back end, and the offensive guys. I mean, they're going to do their job as well. I mean, you saw that. I mean, first two games, the scoring wasn't there, but I mean, things were clicking, and things are going to continue to click as the season progresses. So looking forward to getting out to Vancouver and getting going with the guys.
Yeah, I think when everyone looks at an offense that has Adam Jones and Rob Hellier and Tom Schreiber and Brett Hickey and more and thinks, okay, they're going to score a bunch. And the first couple of games, it was pretty slow. They were kind of getting things sorted out, and it's easy to forget that, you know, Adam Jones, brand new to the club. Rob Hellier missed a year, is coming back. He and Schreiber and Hickey having to kind of figure out how things are going to work over there. You've got the youngsters in Reinholdt and Craig and Lintner in there. There's a lot of things to work out, but we knew it was coming, and it definitely must have been fun to watch those guys doing their thing as you scored 20 goals.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely an exciting game to watch and an exciting game to be a part of. So yeah, hopefully that continues to be a trend as the season goes on. And I mean, obviously not every night's gonna be like that, but I mean, when the offense is down, the offense is down, that you guys have to be there to to kind of have their backs and vice versa. So, I mean.
Yeah. I want to mention one other guy that you actually brought up, Billy Hostrauser. Obviously taking on a leadership role on this team. And he's a guy that when he came into the league, he was known as a tough guy. I honestly thought defensively he was really – I didn't think he was a very good defender early in his career. And he's a great guy off the floor. He's always been a really good guy, really easy to talk to. But he is a guy who has worked so hard to make himself – an NLL caliber defender to the point where now, I mean, he's never a liability on the floor. I think he's a solid D guy. He kills penalties, and he really has, to me, taken to the challenge of making himself a legitimate defender, and has done a great job of it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, he's a hard guy to play against. And like you said, I mean, he's taking that leadership role, and I'm new to the team and I could already see it. So, I mean, yeah, he's a great guy to be around, and he gets the boys going for sure.
Appreciate you taking the time after practice to chat here on Boxlebeat, and it's always a pleasure, and certainly wish you the best of luck in your new surroundings.
I appreciate that.
All right, that will just about wrap things up for this episode of Boxlebeat with former teammates Jay Thornburt and Sheldon Burns. Thornburt with the New England Black Wolves. Burns, of course, now with the Toronto Rock. And I enjoy bringing you the best of lacrosse podcasting every week, talking about the National Lacrosse League with the players, the coaches, and the people who cover the game that make it what it is. Thank you so much, lacrosse friends, for being with me. Thanks to Thornburt and Burns for being here, and we'll see you next time on Boxlebeat on NLL Radio.